Change doesn't wait. Sometimes it storms in, sometimes it creeps quietly, unfolding in ways we notice later. It stirs in boardrooms, classrooms, streets, and communities, wherever people act with purpose. What moves you? A vision? A challenge? A belief in business as a force for good? And what holds you back? External factors or limiting beliefs? I'm Gary Watts, and this is Moved, the podcast of 289 people inspiring change. I'll be speaking with people exploring what first moved them, what they've achieved, and the challenges they've had to overcome, both outside and within. Each episode is about human performance, leadership, sustainability, doing the work that matters, and the moments that change everything. This is Moved. Tessa Clark is the co-founder and CEO of Olio, the community-driven app tackling waste and promoting sustainable living. Olio has grown into a global movement with millions of users sharing surplus food and household items. Tessa is also a TED speaker and an ambassador for the Better Business Act. She was also named Verve Clicquot Bold Woman of the Year in 2023. She's passionate about the power of technology to drive systemic change. She champions purpose-led business, climate action, and community collaboration to build a more sustainable and equitable future. It's an engaging conversation. Tessa, really good to have you on the show.
Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, an absolute pleasure. The place I would love to start is inspired by your TED Talk, really, which I watched recently. And I guess it's all around the big idea of sharing and the climate impact of sharing. So could we start there and hear more about that?
Yes. So I guess if I had sort of one wish for the world, it would be that we all shared the world's most precious resources rather than wasting them. So through our work at Olio, we're really focused on tackling the problem of food waste specifically, but we also connect people with their neighbours so that they can give away rather than throw away their household items as well. And we really see reducing waste as one of the most powerful things that we can do to help mitigate the worst effects of the climate crisis, the biodiversity crisis, the resource depletion crisis, because the reality is that humanity is using resources at a rate that the earth cannot replenish. And to us, it seems absolutely crazy that we are using resources at a rate which the earth can't replenish, and we're wasting so many of those resources. So if you take food as an example, a third of all the food we produce each year globally goes to waste. It doesn't actually get eaten.
A third.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's an incredibly high number, isn't it?
It is. And it's enormous. It's worth over $1 trillion. And the reason why it's so problematic is because a land mass larger than China is used every year to grow food that's never eaten. So that is land that has been deforested, species that have been driven to extinction, soil that's been degraded. A quarter of humanity's fresh water is used to grow food that's never eaten. And then that food goes on an incredibly carbon intensive journey of lots of packaging and refrigeration and distribution, etc.
Yeah, yeah. I've heard of a number of things, like such as we all consumed in a similar way to maybe, you know, some countries, it would take a certain number of Earths. And also, I think I've heard in terms of food production globally, which would align with your statistic, there's enough actually for something like on average 5,000 calories a day per person, which is way more than we need. But so we produce enough. It's just that we're wasting.
No, absolutely. So in terms of the planets and how many planets would we need, if everybody in the world were to live like a typical American, we would need 5 planets. And if everybody in the world were to live like a typical British citizen, we would need 3 planets. And collectively, we're consuming the world's resources as if we have 1.75 planets, which obviously, news alert, we do not. And same with the food production. We have more than enough food for everybody in the world. But what is particularly frustrating is that on the one hand, we are wasting a third of all the food we produce each year. And on the other hand, we have 800 million people who are going to bed hungry every night. And those 800 million people could be fed on just a quarter of the food that we waste in the Western world.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. So what would you like to see, and where do you start?
Well, good question. Where we have started at Olio is really focused on tackling that problem of food waste, and specifically tackling the problem of food waste in the home. Because when most people think about food waste, it's very natural for your mind to immediately go to the supermarkets and assume that they must be the ones who are wasting lots of food. But actually here in the UK, yes, we waste a third of all the food that's produced in the UK too. So we're in line with the global stats. But when you look at where that food waste takes place, actually only 2% of all food waste in the UK takes place at a retail store level, and 60% of all food waste takes place in the home. So that means that actually, you know, on the one hand, that's kind of depressing, right? Realizing that we are such a big part of this problem, but I prefer to see it as actually really exciting and something to be optimistic about, because it means that if we're sort of over half the problem, then by the same logic, it means we can be over half the solution. And so what we do at Olio is we connect people with their neighbours so they can give away, run, throw away their spare food and household items. Because our core insights when we sort of dug into this area was no one likes wasting food. And actually we're sort of genetically hardwired to dislike it. Human beings are very unique amongst all species in that we do actually share our most precious resource. We share our food, and that's part of the reason why we've been so successful. And so we're hardwired to dislike waste. We're hardwired to actually feel good when we share our food. So why are we wasting so much today? And one of our core beliefs is that we waste so much food in the home today because we're no longer connected to our local community. We no longer have anyone to give that spare food to. So we think that kind of modern life is always going to happen, right? You are always going to go away for the weekend, or go on holiday, or go on a diet, or over cater for a party, or decide to order in instead of eating what you've got in your fridge. That's always going to happen. Where it becomes problematic is when surplus food goes to waste. And that's what Olio aims to tackle, is it reconnects you with your local community, so you have got someone to give your spare food to when it comes about.
Yeah. Yeah. There's so much there in what you said. So one of your first points was around, you know, because many people can be worried about the, you know, the climate crisis and but feel disempowered. But actually one of your points is actually we can feel empowered because 60% of that is actually in the home. So we actually have a huge influence on that. But then sharing, like, it's something that it's more typically associated with, I imagine, you know, or on our road, for example, in a typical community, you might share, you know, garden implements and lawnmowers and things, but food sometimes feels a little bit different with, you know, we can look at, I know there's a thing around best before dates in themselves, but people a bit more cautious maybe about sharing food, and it just feels like a different thing. So just how you get over the, I guess, is there a psychological hurdle in any way? Is it a different category?
No, I mean, you're absolutely right. It does feel different. And that is why we created Olio, because technically you could use a Facebook group or a WhatsApp group to share your food. But the reality is it feels a bit weird. And so what we wanted to do with Olio was create an environment in which it feels completely normal, and the whole experience has been optimized to make that feel safe and also enjoyable. And funnily enough, the biggest psychological barrier that we encounter is not a lack of people wanting to pick up free food from a neighbor. That's not the problem, although that's the problem that most people assume we will have. But trust me, there is no shortage of people who want free food. So the inner student never dies in any of us. Our big psychological barrier, our big challenge, is people tend to assume that no one will want what they have. So people tend to discount sharing. So they think, well, no one will want my three random lemons that I've got, or no one will want half a pack of celery, or whatever it, or two yogurts, whatever it might be. And that's our biggest challenge that we need to help people to overcome, because the reality is that a typical food listing added to the Olio app is requested generally within minutes. Most food listings are requested within less than 30 minutes. So there's an enormous amount of demand. We just need to persuade people to take those 10 seconds or so to offer that food up and make it available. And then once you've done it the first time, and many people we find actually start off using Olio by picking up some free food because that just feels a little bit easier. And through that experience, they will go to someone else's home, they will meet someone on the doorstep, they'll realize that actually this is something that's been going on for years and loads of people are doing it, and it is totally normal and really quite fun and satisfying as well.
Yeah, it sounds it. I the network effect, I'm intrigued around that and what shifts you've seen, because you obviously, you know, circling something really interesting here. I think of, you know, used clothes, and there are really popular apps now, websites in terms of, you know, used secondhand clothes, and you get the network effects, you know, really takes off, and you've almost got kind of critical mass.
Yeah.
What shifts are you seeing in the kind of category of food where some individuals might want to do it, but you need a community to want to do it, because I guess it's more local as well in some respects. How do you see that shift happen?
So that's the real challenge with what we are trying to do, because food almost by definition has to be shared locally.
Yeah.
So you have got to get a critical mass of people in that same location who were all up for it and interested in sharing food. So what that meant was that in the early days of Olio, we really focused on cities, because by definition, there was a higher density of people, which meant there was more probability of being early adopters in any one particular location. As we have grown, we have expanded what Olio does, and we now, an enormous amount of the food that's coming onto the platform actually comes onto the platform thanks to our volunteers who will collect unsold food or unserved food from local businesses. So for example, supermarkets, office, school, hospital, canteens, TV and film production shoots. Those volunteers will pick up that food from that business location, they'll take it home, they'll add it to the app. And what that does is that quickly brings onto the app in any particular local area a high quantity of highly desirable food. This is food that had a price tag on it just half an hour ago, or is beautiful catered food. And so for example, when we rolled out with Tesco, they are real pioneers in the space of reducing food waste. And when we rolled out with them over a period of months, what that meant was that Olio quickly spread across the country. So there's almost 3,000 Tesco stores. So that was almost 3,000 communities that we were live and active in within a space of a couple of months. And then what will happen is people will start off picking up free food that was added to the app by a volunteer. They have the experience of connecting on the doorstep to share food. They realize it's safe, easy, normal and fun. And then at a later date, they go on to reciprocate and either give away their own spare food, or actually sort of more commonly, people are using Olio to give away household items. So, you know, declutter the kids' playroom, or all those books, clothes, toys, toiletries, cosmetics, cleaning products, that, you know, half bottle of shampoo, what on earth are you going to do with it? You don't want to throw it in the bin, but equally you don't want it sort of gathering dust in your drawers. And Olio is really perfect for that.
Yeah, that sounds it. So you're using volunteers to almost like catalyze things by them doing the, to some extent, the sourcing of the products. Then you've got these retail partnerships as well that you're looking at. Definitely sounds compelling. What's your, if it's the appropriate term, what's kind of the market penetration at the moment, or what do you want to see? What's your vision?
Well, you know, it depends if I'm feeling in a generous mood towards myself or not. We spend most of the time beating ourselves up about, you know, we've had 9 million people join Olio, and why haven't we had 900 million people join Olio? Because the scale of the food waste and waste problem is genuinely global and existential for us. But we have been really proud of sort of how quickly, relatively speaking, I guess we have managed to introduce a brand new behaviour, certainly in the modern era, and managed to kind of get that to spread across multiple communities in the country. And then in terms of our real challenge, as I've already touched on, continues to be just encouraging more people to add stuff to the app, both from a household items and from a food items. But in terms of penetration with businesses, we've done a really good job with the supermarket. So many, although not all of the major supermarkets are working with Olio. Yeah. We are redistributing surplus food from just over 500 school canteens. Now there are, you know, 30,000 schools in the country, so we've still got a long way to go there.
Yeah.
We're redistributing from about 50 hospital canteens and concessions, a couple of hundred corporate canteens, and then also hundreds of TV and film production shoots. So that's a sector actually that's really embraced Olio and again has beautiful catered food, often multiple times a day, for large numbers of people. There's often quite a lot of surplus and our community really loves that beautiful catered food.
Wonderful, wonderful. So if you're a supermarket listening that's not on Olio, then now is the time to change it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So when did it start? I actually don't know when you actually formed this. When did it start and where did the idea come from?
So Olio, we sort of founded Olio almost 11 years ago now, actually. And the original inspiration for Olio came from an experience that I had 11 years ago. So I was living overseas and moving back to the UK. And on moving day, the removal men told me I had to throw away all of our uneaten food. And I'm a farmer's daughter. I grew up working really, really, really hard on our family farm, producing food. And so in my family, food waste was absolutely criminal. It was a total no-no. So when I was confronted by the removal men telling me I had to throw perfectly good food in the bin, I just honestly wasn't prepared to do it. So instead, I bundled up my newborn baby and toddler, and I set out into the streets, hoping to find someone to give my food to.
Yeah.
I sort of failed miserably, was a bit despondent, went back to my apartment, and when the removal men were in another room, I smuggled the non-perishable food into the bottom of my packing boxes. And that was when I just thought, wow, Tessa, this is just ridiculous, the lengths you're going to avoid putting food in the bin. But to me, it felt criminal to throw food away when I knew there was someone probably within 100 metres of me who would love it. The only problem was they didn't know about it. And that at that point in time, I'd been working in the digital space for a decade. I knew there was an app for absolutely everything. And I just couldn't believe there wasn't a simple app where I could advertise my spare food and whoever wanted it could request it and pop around and pick it up.
Yeah, yeah. Food almost, you know, in the household, it can look so disposable, can't it? It's perishable. It can look, you know, you can scraping things off plates into bins or into compost bins. It can look so, you know, disposable. Yet if you think about how much energy's gone into that, like initially, you know, usually there's, you know, some ingredients growing, the sun, the rain, the farms, and then all of the, you know, production, manufacturing, travel, so much has gone into it. Mm. And then yet we then just maybe toss bits away, like without thinking.
Absolutely. And I think many of us, you know, we don't enjoy throwing perfectly good food in the bin. So what we tend to do is leave that food that we kind of secretly know we're not going to get around to eating, but we sort of leave it in the fridge in the hope that we will get around to eating it. And then eventually when it's, you know, almost walking out the fridge by itself, we then throw it away because you feel less guilty. It's like, well, no one's going to eat some food if it's moldy or gone off or whatever. So we tend to have all these sorts of tactics to avoid having to put perfectly good food in the bin. But we are all doing it kind of at scale. So a typical household in the UK is throwing away about £1,000 sterling worth of perfectly good food every single year. You know, that is a lot of, never mind the environmental impact, that's a lot of your sort of hard-earned work. And money that is going straight into the bin. So I think it's something that we should all kind of want to avoid. Now, a way that I have found really helpful of framing to look at an apple, for example, as being more than just an apple is to think about the water that went into producing something. So, you know, a typical apple or orange is not just an apple or orange. It's, you know, 70 to 100, if not more, litres of water went into producing just that one thing. And another data point I came across a couple of years ago, which really stuck with me, was some data from RAP Scotland, which said that the environmental impact of throwing away 1 kilogram of food waste was equivalent to the environmental impact of landfilling 25,000 plastic bottles.
Goodness.
So 1 kilogram of food waste equals landfilling 25,500 mil plastic bottles. And so now if I ever find myself thinking, oh, it's just half a head of broccoli, I'm like, but would I throw now a couple of thousand plastic bottles into landfill? No, I wouldn't.
No.
And so personally, I found that sort of framing really helpful. So that yeah. I look at food and don't think it's just X, Y, or Z. I have a better appreciation of what really went into making it, and then also what the impact of throwing it away would be.
Yeah, so it's a thing of education, isn't it? Enlightening yeah. people. You ask most people, would you like to save up to £1,000 a year? Most people would say yes, and
yes,
so
please.
On. All.
Yeah. I think the other challenge we've got in this space as well is because food is so natural, it sort of comes from the ground, it's part of nature. It's really easy to think, well, how harmful can food or food waste be? How bad can it be? And many people will say, oh, you know, but I compost. So, you know, that's fantastic. I've sort of neutralized the negative impact of any food waste. But unfortunately, actually, if you look at the emissions associated with food waste, sort of 80 to 90% of it takes place before it's even reached your house. So yes, putting your food waste into compost is significantly better than throwing it in your black bin bag. But actually, you have still wasted all of the resources that went into the production of that food in the first place. And so really, we all need to be trying to eat that food. You know, kind of food is meant to be eaten and eaten by humans, certainly not being wasted or even turned into electricity or even given as animal feed. We need to be getting much more efficient and making sure that we eat as much as possible that was intended to be eaten.
Yeah, definitely. I'm interested in, you mentioned you grew up on a farm, and I'm interested yeah. in what would be, you know, the experiences that you would have growing up on a farm, which clearly, you know, make you feel this so viscerally, you know, absolutely, you would struggle with food waste and throwing away food, you know, and I'm interested in what happens growing up on a farm that helps you feel so connected to that. Yeah. And at the same time, many people don't grow up on farms, and so you know, maybe more disconnected and
yeah.
you know, don't feel that as viscerally. And how you change that, help people feel more connected.
Yeah. When I think about this, I think about my dad. So my dad, and I'll try not to get emotional about it, but you know, my dad got up every single day, 7 days a week, and sort of 51 or 52 weeks a year at 3 or 3:30 in the morning, and worked through till 10 o'clock at night, if not later, nonstop. And he was doing that into his early 70s. So just the, and this is, it can be tanking it down with rain, you are wading around in mud up to your knees and worse. It can be minus 13 degrees. It is just a very, very physically, but also mentally tough and demanding job. Suicide rates in farmers, it's one of the highest, if not the highest profession for suicide, because it is just so stressful. And certainly for farmers in this country, you know, every single year I grew up with this sort of cloud over our heads of this is going to be the year that we're going to go bankrupt. So again, like the stress that creates for a family. And also when you're farming, there's so little that you're in control of. You can't control the price at which you sell to, because it's bought by all these big monopolies. You can't control the price for your inputs. You can't control the weather. You've then got animals and machinery, which are always sort of, you know, going wrong at the wrong time. So it's a very, very stressful upbringing. And a way I like to think about it is sort of, how would anyone listening to this podcast feel if they have busted their guts, they put in a 14, 16, 18 more hour day, and at the end of the day, perhaps they've closed their laptop and then someone just deleted a third of everything they've done.
Yeah.
You'd be devastated, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
And that essentially is what is happening. So and you know, listen, I'm painting a picture of the challenging side of farming. It's also a wonderful, you know, upbringing. I was very lucky as a child to grow up on a farm outside. You know, lots of opportunity to explore and adventure and play, and you know, never bored on a farm. But yeah, farming is a very, very tough job to do.
Yeah, yeah, and hence you have that kind of strong connection. But for the many, maybe majority of people that are, you know, I feel disconnected from, you know, you can easily, I buy my food from a supermarket. You know, if you were to buy meat, you don't necessarily, you don't see kind of what's going, you don't see those kind of the hours and the 51 weeks a year and so on. So how do you, I guess, you know, cause you don't want to be without preaching.
On a more kind of day-to-day basis, if you don't see how your food is being produced, how can you stay connected to it?
Yeah.
And one of the things, you know, I no longer live on a farm. I too am sort of buying my food, not sort of something that we've grown outside. And one of the ways that I actually find really helpful to stay connected is a couple of years ago, I started subscribing to a vegetable subscription box from Riverford Organic, because it was really important to me to invest in trying to eat organic food because of the positive impact, not just, you know, on my family's health, but on biodiversity and animal welfare, etc. And also through reducing our meat consumption, you can then afford to invest in organic fruit and veg. Anyway, Riverford Organic send you a weekly veg box. They have all sorts of different types, but each week they have a newsletter, which is basically kind of a written, almost like a diary extract from the farm, written by Guy, who is the founder there. And I find that really reconnecting. It takes, you know, 30 seconds to read, but you understand that they've had a terrible sort of patch of frost, and this has killed X, Y, and Z, and so now they've had to do A, B, and C. And through those sort of 52 newsletters that come every year that don't take long at all to read, they do actually just reconnect and remind you that there are real human beings who are out in the fields, in the soil, who have worked so hard to get this food to me here on my doorstep and in my kitchen. So that I find sort of one of the most powerful ways of reconnecting. And then another way, honestly, is there are so many fantastic documentaries. So actually, just two nights ago with my family, we sat down and watched the documentary called Eating for Tomorrow, which is narrated by Kate Winslet, and it's all about our food system, and it shows you, it peels back the layers, and it shows you the reality that we are all complicit in. And I think the more people, and once you've watched that and understood what is happening, you can't help but want to change your behaviours, because the reality is that we're incredibly empowered as consumers. Consumers do drive the economy. They shape the world that we live in. And I like to think of every pound I spend as a vote, and I can vote for the type of world that I want to exist, the type of world that I want to be part of. And many of us eat three times a day, so that means that three times a day you've got an opportunity to vote. And so much of the narrative at the moment around the climate crisis is very focused on carbon emissions and the energy transition, but we're completely overlooking something which is just as impactful, which is the food system and the food transition that we all need to do. And what's really exciting about that is we do not have to wait for governments or businesses to make a different type of energy available. We can, with our own pounds and pence, vote for the food system that we want. And it's actually kind of, you know, it can be surprisingly fun to start rethinking your food and how you eat, and very, very empowering.
Yeah. So as well as what you're doing with, obviously, with Olio and the app and so on, the technology, you're linking, you know, demand and supply and enabling that to happen at a local community level. But your Riverford leaflet equivalent for Olio, and I guess helping lighten up the majority of people with this information and education and insight, where is that for you?
Yeah, so we invest really heavily on taking our community sort of on a journey and educating them. But what we have learned over the years is that whilst we as founders and as a team are really motivated by playing our part in solving the climate crisis and the biodiversity and resource depletion crises, actually that's not the best entry point for most people. For most people, the best entry point is to talk about the human impact that we're having, because actually at the end of the day, we're all humans, and we relate to other humans, and we feel very motivated by other humans, and we want to feel like we're part of a community. So a lot of our communications is talking about the very positive human impact that people can have through giving away rather than throwing away their spare food and household items. And every single day, we just get incredible tear-jerking stories and testimonials from people about the impact that getting access to that food meant when they were struggling to put food on the table. So actually, I had this experience personally just yesterday. I was giving a talk at a secondary school, and I had a young boy come up to me afterwards and thank me and the team at Olio for creating Olio, because it had enabled him and his mum to eat when they were going through a very, very financially tricky situation. They were in debt. It was very stressful. Olio not only enabled them to eat, it also enabled their mum, his mum, to get out of debt. And wow, that human impact is much more motivating and moving than however many, you know, kilograms of CO2 we might have saved through the food that we were redistributing to him and his family. So I think the sort of leading with the human is the most powerful way to invite people onto the journey. And then over time, we educate them, or we try to educate, about the problem of food waste and what people can do about it.
Yeah, yeah, really powerful. So I think most people listening to this will have a smartphone, and on that smartphone, most people use various like free recycling apps, or you know, used clothes, buying and selling type apps. So if you don't have Olio on your phone, definitely install the Olio app, because it sounds really powerful what you're building and like the service that you're providing there. How do you find the volunteers?
The volunteers we recruit from our community. So today we've got over 100,000 volunteers.
Wow, that's a lot.
Yeah. So again, lots of people want to participate. They want to take agency. They want to help their local community and reduce waste in their local community. So yeah, we have over 100,000 food safety trained volunteers. We have over 50,000 ambassadors. So this is another type of volunteer. These are people who want to spread the word about Olio in their local community. And we give them posters and letters and flyers. And again, it really is sort of the community that's at the heart of Olio and that enable it to happen. And to date, we have collectively saved over 130 million meals worth of food. And the Olio platform has rehomed 15 million household items.
Wow.
That's impacted so many people's lives. But then in terms of the environmental impact, that is equivalent to taking over 1 billion car miles off the road.
Yeah.
And also we've saved over 40 billion litres of water. So again, those really, really tiny small acts that might seem like not much at all in your home actually collectively can scale up and add up to something really, really profound.
Yeah. Yeah, they're big numbers. Yeah. And I get a strong sense speaking with you that you're not done by any means.
No, we are not. No, we've only just started. We really have. Yeah, got a long way to go.
Yeah. What drives you? Like, what is the thing that is it? Is it like, you know, what you see growing up on a farm, or is it, you know, what is the thing that really drives you with this?
I think it's a combination of my upbringing. I've now also got two young children, and I think about the world that they will be inheriting, and honestly, it terrifies me. And I read the climate science, and the message from the scientists could not be clearer to us, and I just don't want to be part of the problem. I want to be part of the solution. And I really do believe in the power of billions of small actions cumulatively adding up to transformative change. And whenever someone sort of feels overwhelmed about, oh, we can't make a difference, I'm like, well, let's look at TikTok, right? You know, that billions of small actions have taken that from nothing to sort of dominating many people's lives, our society, our culture. So in the same way, billions of small actions, us all deciding collectively, actually, I'm going to stop throwing away my food, and I'm going to give it away where I can, and I'm going to declutter my home and rehome things. All of those things, I'm going to try and buy secondhand. I'm going to try and reduce my meat and fish consumption. All of those things really do add up, and they have an enormous impact. And again, what's exciting about that is that we don't have to wait for governments or businesses to do anything. And certainly on my personal experience, where as a family we've experimented with trying to live more sustainably, we have found that we are wealthier, we are healthier, and we are happier. And that has happened as a result of just doing hundreds and hundreds of simple swaps in our lives, just like one thing, one thing, one thing, one thing. And actually so much so that I'm just finishing off writing a book actually about this, kind of sharing all of those simple swaps and that journey that me and my family have been on, because I think at the moment it's too easy to think about sustainable living and assume that it means sacrifice and compromise and go vegan, never fly, live in a cardboard box off grid. It all just sounds a bit bloody miserable, doesn't it? But actually the reality, certainly on sort of my experience, just couldn't be further from that. It's just been the most incredibly uplifting and empowering and fulfilling experience that has saved us money and has made us healthier. So there's a lot going for it.
Wealthier,
healthier and happier.
Yeah, there are three things that most people would definitely be wanting. Sometimes I've discussed with other people, actually, the word sustainable sometimes doesn't sound like the best word. It sounds like, maybe a little bit boring or flat or, you know, sacrificing type things. But yeah, wealthier, healthier and happier. That's really, it's hugely powerful.
Yeah.
Goodness me. So if somebody... if I or a listener wanted to become a volunteer or an ambassador for Olio, how would you do it?
So I would go to your App Store or Google Play, I'd download the Olio app, and then through the emails that we send you and through various touch points in the app, we invite you to join our mission and our wonderful community of people who come from all walks of life. But they're all just shared with that same sort of vision that we want for the world, which is one where we're connected to our local communities and the world's most precious resources are used, not wasted. And honestly, also that everyone has enough, because the reality is we have enough food, we have enough stuff in our local communities. No one should have to go hungry. No one should have to go without. We just need to get better at redistributing that stuff. And that's where mobile technology can really make that much easier.
Yeah. And do you have you locked on a title for your book or an estimated publish date?
The hoping that it will be coming out this time in a year, so kind of January 2027. My working title is Simple Swaps, because that's kind of what it is, and I want it very much to be a guilt-free guide to sustainable living, but it'll have to go through the publishing process, so who knows what it will be called by the end of it, but that's what it is in my mind right now.
Fabulous. So look out for it, and hopefully we'll maybe speak again around that point. I'm also aware that from a UK business point of view, you're an ambassador for the Better Business Act, and I was also looking at with the Department for Business and Trade Small Business Growth Forum. Could you just touch on those two things, particularly the Better Business Act? I've heard a lot about recently, and share about those things for us.
So I'm very excited about the Better Business Act, because as I look at the future world and where humanity is barreling towards, it's not looking good. And I'm always on the lookout for things that can have disproportionate impact. So I always remember the Archimedes expression, find me a lever and a place to stand and I will move the world. And I genuinely think that the Better Business Act is one of those things. Mm-hmm. So the Better Business Act is campaigning to change, I think it's roughly about 12 words in section 172 of the Companies Act, which at the moment, most company directors read and assume that their primary responsibility is to maximize shareholder returns, to maximize profitability of their organizations. And the Better Business Act is campaigning instead to replace that and to make it clear that actually the primary responsibility of company directors is to give equal weight to people, to planet, and to profit.
Yeah.
And certainly as someone who's run a number of organizations over a couple of decades, I've seen sort of firsthand, in particular in sales teams, if you have your sales teams targeted on X outcome in 1 week, they will act in a certain way on that Friday. And then if you change the incentives, change the definition of success, the same group of people will behave in a completely different way that next Monday when you have changed where they need to be heading. And I really believe that we can do the same for business. And what's really exciting about the Better Business Act is that over 3,000 companies across the UK, both large and small, have signed up and said that this is what business needs to be about. And again, I think, you know, if you were sort of someone to descend from Mars on the UK, you'd be scratching your head at the moment around the current role of business. You'd be saying, what on earth is the point of a business that is all about maximizing profit for a few people whilst, you know, wreaking devastation on the planet and on local communities? So it's really clear to me that business is such a powerful force for change, for innovation, and we need to harness it and just course correct it, because at the moment it's business is not helping.
Yeah, I've heard that referred to as triple P, I think, people, planet and profit. And obviously profit is really important. Profit fuels the things you want to do, but also people and planet, like business is for people. That's surely all that business is for, is correct, for people. Yeah. And also business sort of depends on the planet.
It does. Absolutely. Every single business depends on the planet in some way, shape or form.
Yeah.
And so to be sort of continually degrading the planet, destroying the planet, is just a very, very short-term approach to business.
Yeah, yeah. Wow, thank you so much for sharing that. So last but not least, a favourite example of something either you've shared or something that someone else has shared maybe on your platform that surprised you?
Oh, gosh. Actually, the kids asked me that yesterday at the school. And I had to, I had to sort of rack my brain. We had an organ shared once. I mean, like an organ from a church.
Oh, thank goodness.
An organ. Yes, not an organ. Sorry, gosh, I should be clear. Not a bodily organ, no.
Yeah.
From that through to, we've had people give away bottles of champagne, which always surprises me that anyone would have surplus champagne. And sort of, you know, everything in between. We've had, I remember once seeing kind of 5 litres of vinegar and thinking, why on earth has someone got 5 litres of vinegar? But it was a school, I think, that had been using it for a chemistry experiment or something. So there's nothing too sort of large or small to go on Olio. And even as one of the co-founders of Olio, I sometimes find myself thinking, no one will want this. And yet, 9 times out of 10, whatever it is gets snapped up, because it really is true what they say, one person's trash is another person's treasure.
Wow, what a lovely quote. Last but not least, every listener, one thing that they could start doing today to share more and waste less, what would you say?
I would honestly say that if there's one thing we need to be sharing more of and wasting less, it is our food. And obviously I'm sort of biased, but let me back that up with some data. So there's something called Project Drawdown, which stack ranked both for humanity overall, the top 100 things that humans can do to solve the climate crisis. But actually, really interestingly, they stack ranked a whole bunch of stuff that people in the Western world can do in their homes. And the sort of tied number one position was to eat more plant-based and to reduce your food waste. And that came way above, I think sort of plastic recycling was down in position number 11 or something. And electric cars were down at position 8. And, you know, even solar panels were quite way down there. So reducing food waste, it sounds like a really small thing, but it is one of the most powerful things we can do. And how I do it is I remember my kind of, I've got lots of S's in my mind. So if you want to reduce your food waste, first of all, shop with a plan. And never shop hungry. The second thing is to learn how to store your food properly. So there are hundreds of tips and tricks you can find online, but some of my favorites are never store your potatoes and your onions together, which I always used to do, but it accelerates the rate at which they go off. So shop with a plan, store stuff properly. Serve up on smaller plates, because smaller plate, you'll put less on your plate, which means you'll waste less. Save your leftovers. Without a shadow of a doubt, our best family meals, these totally random ones, you think, oh, those three things won't go together. But, you know, a couple of days later, they taste absolutely wonderful.
Yeah.
Smoothies is another S. So that sad, wrinkly looking apple that you wouldn't choose to eat, lobbed in with a wrinkly carrot and whatever, you know, yogurt, milk and some berries, makes a delicious smoothie. And then the final S, of course, is to share your spare, either by knocking on your neighbour's doors if you fancy, or by using an app called Olio.
Yeah. Wonderful. What a lovely place to finish. Tessa, it's been an absolute delight having you on here. I've loved the conversation. You've definitely changed my thinking and evolved my thinking. So thank you so much.
Good. Mission accomplished. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, mission definitely accomplished. Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for joining me on this episode of Moved. If it sparks something for you, subscribe, and share it with someone who's looking to make a difference. I'm Gary Watts, and I'll see you next time as we explore what moves people and ideas forward.